Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of the podcast. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, I have the honor of being joined by Amy DeLuise. She is a creative director, but she's so much more than that. She is basically the consummate content creator for the current millennia, right? She knows what she's doing. She knows the tech. She knows everything from how to make an amazing Zoom call look good all the way through to blockbuster type, you know, backlot studio stuff. So I get to put her on the hot seat today to talk about virtual events and a bunch of other things. So all that is coming your way next on this episode of the podcast.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Amy DeLuise is on the hot seat. Amy, how are you doing? And thank you for doing this.
Hey, it is great to be here. You know, it's great to be anywhere that's sort of imaginatively outside of my little box here. I feel like, you know, the mind was trapped in their little Zoom box every day.
Marcel DeLuise.
Seriously.
I love it. And there's so much to talk about. In that little intro I did there, I was talking about how multifaceted you are and all the things that you're involved in. You and I have had the pleasure of being on events together in the past. That's kind of how we've connected. And I'm always in awe at your professionalism, for one, because you just approach everything very like, okay, what's next? And how do we do this? Boom, boom, boom. But then also your management of events and the emceeing side of it. I want to back up from all that and just start with who you are, right? So you're at one of those cool Hollywood cocktail parties talking to random people and they say, hey, how you doing? What is it that you do? What do you say?
You know, I used to say a whole bunch of stuff and now I just say I'm a digital storyteller. Because, you know, it used to be filmmaker and then it was video producer and small business owner and entrepreneur. And there's a lot of different things rolled into it. But really, I think we're all digital storytellers now in different modes with different tools.
Yeah, I agree. And we've talked about that a lot on the podcast, just in terms of storytelling or lack thereof in some cases in the world of, let's call it amateur and advanced amateur content creation, videography, et cetera. In the photography side, which is the world that I play in mostly, I see people that are amazing artists, just amazing on the creative side and the technical side, you know, the post-production side. But a lot of them lack that story element. Like, why are you taking this picture of this bug? Or why are you taking the picture of this beautiful landscape? All that. When you're teaching and when you're explaining just sort of the art of digital storytelling, how do you box that? How do you get people out of that mode of, hey, everything, it looks good, it's a pretty picture, into let's talk about something?
Well, you know, it all starts with the audience, right? Everybody often starts from themselves and whatever's going on in their world, right? So I work with a lot of corporate communicators and nonprofit communicators, and they're all, you know, they're thinking like, we have to put so-and-so on camera, you know, or we have to produce this event, or we have to get, you know, donations from these people. But we have to kind of flip it around as storytellers and say, well, what's going to draw the audience into this? Why will they watch this? There is so much content out there and we all know it, right? I mean, there's so much competing with everything we're doing, including, you know, a lot of frankly garbagey content and something really entertaining on TikTok and, you know, videos my kids watch and everything else. So what can we do to make the audience want to come and be part of this story? That's the first question. The answer has nothing to do with the tech at all.
Right. Yeah. Work backwards. You know, it's you don't decide to, you know, hey, look, I have some flour. What can I do with that flour? Right. It's more of, I want to bake a cake. What do I need to bake that cake? Right. I need flour. Right. I need salt. Yada, yada, yada. Here's a pointed question. So should artists, you know, and I'm using the word artists because we're encompassing digital, right? So should artists look at the things that they're creating from a 30,000 foot view of an overall story, kind of like, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Marvel has right. built this giant universe, and then they put characters right. in it that do things. Should photographers and other content creators, artists do that? Like, just play in their right. own little world? Or should it be siloed and niched?
Right. Well, I think there's a couple different answers to that question. The first one is, why are you telling this story? Okay, sometimes, especially when I work with my not-for-profit clients and we're telling a story to basically make people cry and write big checks, ultimately, it's because something needs to happen in the world, right? We're trying to tell a story that somebody needs to hear, somebody who needs water in a small town in Africa, somebody who needs, you know, to save the whales, somebody who, you know, there's some compelling story out there. And we feel like it hasn't really been told, or it hasn't been told in this way. So the first question is, why do you want to tell that story? Then you can step back and say, okay, is this an interconnected story? Do we want to tell it from multiple vantage points? Are we telling it on different platforms in different ways? Might there be a long version and a short version and a more casual version and a more mm-hmm. filmic, cinematic version? So those are all the questions you have to ask yourself right up front. What's the story? Why are we telling it? And then where is my audience? Where are they going to see it? Where are they going to hear it? Because I'm very into sound as a musician also. I really care about the sound part of the storytelling as well.
Yeah. See, there's so much to talk about there, because there's the side of it of, you know, I use the term on This Week in Photo and even the Behind the Scene podcast of what is, are you like, can you paint yourself with the label of photographer or videographer or filmmaker? You know, is that too restrictive these days? Because right. we're dealing with mixed media. Like you're saying, sound, yes, right? So totally. I can create a photo with a narrative audio track that goes along with it. It's not just a photo anymore. Should photographers be looking at things from the standpoint of, I want to tell a story. What's the best way and the best medium to tell that story?
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, I have a friend who's a photographer and has a fantastic website and often is showing kind of behind the scenes of how she built that photo. And that in itself is a story. Yes, absolutely. I think there's so much crossover. So, I mean, I hate the terms of multi-platform content creator. It's so clunky. Filmmaker mm-hmm. is just more elegant. But, it's really true that we are all multi-platform content creators. And it really just depends on the platform, how you want to develop that story for that particular audience.
Yeah. I just think that the even the word photographer seems so vocational and so myopic, right? A photographer, recorder of light, right? So this is the thing that right. I do. No art involved. It's just I record light, you know, that's it. The storytelling thing that you teach is much more appropriate, right? It's much more, I tell stories and I pick whatever paintbrushes and paint out of my my box that makes sense for that particular right. thing. So then, Amy, how does it look if we fast forward from that and we say, okay, I get it. I'm not a photographer. I'm not a filmmaker, whatever. I'm a digital storyteller. How do we move into picking what we want to tell stories about? Cause it could be, current events, photojournalism, you want to talk about right. social unrest or that thing, or you want to talk about right. global warming or a love story. Right. How do you find your thing?
Right. Well, and this is where the business owner part of it comes in a little bit, because yeah. I mean, yes, in a perfect world, I would just tell all the stories I want to tell. And I have many, many stories to tell. But in the real world, I also have to tell the stories people are willing to pay me to tell, or that they themselves need to tell. And so, there's that delicate balance between what compels you as a passion and what you can sell in the marketplace in some regard, unless you happen to be, the winner of the lottery and you can just film or photograph whatever you like. So, I mean, I think that's the nexus of it. And for me, that my passion has always been real people's stories. From the very beginning of my career, when I actually worked on feature films, which you alluded to a little bit. I mean, one of the first films I worked on was Forrest Gump, and I was in the art department researching all kinds of, film clips of Richard Nixon shaking hands with people who were the same height as Tom Hanks. but I actually would like do these dives into all that stuff. And I'd come out, you know, the archive 6 hours later, you know, with all these other stories in my head, because I'd watched all the film footage. Even though I learned a ton on that project and many other features that I worked on, I realized that my passion was the nonfiction storytelling, the real people and their lives. And so that was my niche. But everybody has to find the niche that makes them passionate so that they can excel at it and be good at it.
And how do you find that niche? Is it just doing it and then figuring out, oh, that sucks, I don't want to do that anymore? Or, you know, kind of like, yeah, I know in a previous podcast, we talked about it as dating. You know, you have to date multiple genres till you find out the one that you want to marry. Is it like that? Until you buy?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And like dating, as you evolve as a human being, the people who appeal to you may be different. You know,
that's so very true.
The people you dated in your youth may not be the people you end up with. And so, you know, I think also our industries have evolved too, both photography, filmmaking, and whatever this digital multi-platform world is that we're in now. And even the remote production world has been evolving really interestingly. So there's different stories to tell based on, you know, who you are, who you've evolved into as a person, and also what's going on in the world around you.
Yeah. And then that is a good off ramp into the discussion and just briefly about gear and how obsessive, again, speaking of my own genre, photography, right? Photographers tend to become very obsessed with gear, sometimes tribal or even religious, right? About their gear. Right.
No, I totally get it. You know, I'm like, I love Sennheiser microphones. You know, I'd kill myself and slit my throat if I had to use a different brand or whatever. I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. Or, you know, Zeiss lenses are the only lenses I could ever use, or the Cook look or whatever. I get that. And, you know, what I think has been so fascinating about remote production and all of us, again, like trapped in our little Zoom worlds or whatever, is that we've had to start getting creative with totally different gear than we might have ever thought of using in a quote unquote professional context. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I went out and bought a Saramonic Blink 500 little wireless lavalier. I'm actually wearing the microphone piece of it, but I have a pack that fits into my phone, and I can, you know, make really solid recordings with my phone with the wireless transmitter on my Saramonic, or, you know, sending somebody a LumaCube so that they look a little bit better on a Zoom recording or a Skype recording, or sending kits. I have a colleague who's built a whole kit with a Canon based camera kit, because he can backdoor into the software and actually be able to manage the lenses and everything remotely for a remote interview with a higher quality camera. So like all this stuff that we would never have thought of doing, I would have totally much preferred to, like, you know, show up with, you know, a Red camera or something. But, you know, I'm not going to do that now because it's just not possible in some cases.
Right. No, absolutely. Things have changed, right? And, you know, as we record this, we're in mid-February of 2021, right? And future people,
which
if you know,
you're called 2022.0. It's like the same old, same old. Like,
yeah, 2020.1. Yeah, as well.
Hasn't changed at all, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. It's just continuation.
It is totally. But the people in the future that are watching this remember what's going on. So we're in the middle. Hopefully we're in the middle of, or the tail end of, the pandemic. We don't know, because we're still in it right now. As you watch this, hopefully it's history, right? But, you know, that said, things have changed, right? From 2019 to where we are now in 2021, the world in terms of its acceptance of even this, we're doing this interview remotely. We could have been in Zoom, right? There's options that are available to us that weren't even available back then. Right. How has all that changed on the virtual event sort of world landscape? Is it a temporary band-aid, that this virtual stuff, until we can get back to the normalcy a physical, or is it permanent? Right. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a combination, and I've been blogging a whole series about virtual events and virtual production, because I think this is really a fascinating evolution that we've been going through. Some of it, is just figuring out what are the tactics that we can do to survive this experience. But I think when it's over, there's going to be a hybrid model especially for events. And I do a lot of content that ends up, you know, on big screens back in the day at large live events. And I think we're still going to want to have events. People are still going to want to hug each other. People are still going to want to, you know, give out the award physically, all that stuff. But then we're going to have, you know, the virtual wall of people who are joining from halfway around the globe who couldn't afford to come, or maybe, you know, are younger people who are in whatever that industry is and couldn't afford to come to that conference. So I think we're going to a global model of content and interaction. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I've been on this and excited about this even before all this COVID thing kind of derailed everything. It was just the idea of these conferences, like, you know, in the photo world, WPPI, Photo Plus Expo, on the video side, NAB, these kinds of amazing events where people come together and vendors come in there and show their latest wares and all that. But it's always, what about those people that can't afford or are unable to, for whatever reasons, travel internationally or across the country to come to this event? Right. Wouldn't it be great to have access for those people that isn't a, you know, lower class citizen type access? Like, hey, you can pay and you can get the downloads of the sessions from the camera that was in the back of the room out of focus, right? Now it seems like we're going to up level to production level or high production level quality for the virtual side of things. So then what is that, you know, as we leave this, what do you feel like the world is going to look like? Right, the world according to Amy in 2023, let's say.
My fantasy world. Well, I'll tell you what I'm excited about as from the producer side, which you know is sort of that agonizing intersection between creative and like making all the logistics work without your head exploding. And so what I would love to see is, you know, all these platforms that worked so hard during COVID to make it work, you know, Zoom with their, you know, incredible backbone, and, you know, Hopin has done some really innovative things and just bought StreamYard. And, you know, there's just all these incredible platforms out there that have been really working to integrate, you know, everything from polling to whiteboards to, you know, live performances and everything else. I would love to see, you know, that continue so that we can, you know, for example, with performances, you know, bring a performer from Japan into a conference that's in Vegas and, you know, all those kinds of things. I think the creative input could be really amazing, not just people in little boxes, you know, on the screen coming in for a panel. I think we can go way beyond that. I was recently hosting, speaking of Japan, a series of webinars for the US-Japan Bridging Foundation, which was so cool because I got to talk to people in the US and Japan live on these webinars, and was talking to an amazing artist in Japan who's been pulling together sort of heritage arts that are made from ancient traditions. And, you know, she's doing all this amazing filmmaking that I would love to see at a conference here. And she could be live streaming it and, you know, outside of Kyoto where she lives. So there's just amazing content that we now have access to. And I think that's where the real excitement is going to be after COVID.
Yeah. Do you think that because of some of the changes that we're experiencing right now with this distance work and lockdown and all that stuff, will there be entirely new forms of art that spring up from this? I was thinking about this the other day, just like, you know, any kind of calamity or big change sparks new kinds of things, right?
Totally.
Yeah. I'm curious what you think about that. Are we going to see like the first fill in the blank thing, you know?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of this emerge. Actually, VR really took a lot of leaps and bounds in this past year. And I was just earlier today on a Microsoft VR workshop and XR boot camp that was super cool, just about the evolution of avatars and, you know, creating your virtual identity on all these different platforms and how it could link together depending on where you're dropping in and out of virtual platforms. So I think there's like a lot of creativity around XR and AR and VR, both on the artistic side and on the sort of educational content side. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see that really continue to explode.
Yeah, here's a hyper nerdy nerdy idea I want to throw at you. This has been in the back of my head for like a year now, since I discovered an application called Descript. Are you familiar with Descript? Have you seen that thing?
No.
It's descript.com. And basically, at its core, essentially what it does is allows you to edit audio and video like a Google Doc. So it does a scan and gives you text, and you edit the text, and the text edits Ripple into the content. But they've also added a feature in there called Overdub, which you train it for a half an hour with your voice, and now in the text you can insert words that weren't there before, and it will synthesize and generate those words based on how you've trained it, and it's pretty damn accurate. So if I create a VO and I mispronounce the company name or your name, right, I can go in and re-record that, or just type it actually and say, you know, search it, global search and replace. And now every time I say your last name, it's correct again. So the thing I went through at you is that technology, being able to generate and synthesize realistic speech. And then I saw just a couple of days ago, there's this, I forget the name of it, I'll put it in the show notes, but there's this app that allows, that's basically from Unreal, the folks at Unreal that do the Unreal Engine, that creates hyper-realistic people or avatars that look just like you and I, maybe better, right than you and I. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be cool, Amy, in the future to be able to have a perfect digital version of me looking my best with my voice that I can have go into the Zoom and I just text what he says.
Right. Well, and this is a conversation that actually after SAG has been having quite a bit about actors and sort of preserving their three-dimensional selves and then having them appear in movies, you know, after they're gone and all of that. So that's a whole other day we can talk about that. But just going back to where you started, you know, with that app you were talking about, I mean, we're talking about machine learning and AI, and I think that is also transforming creative work, and not in the scary way that everybody thinks. I mean, everybody's always like, oh my God, you know, machine is going to replace me or whatever. I'm not worried about that, because maybe I just have that big of an ego, or I think I'm that creative, but I just feel like it's the opposite. Like AI is going to help me like do all these really boring tasks, like going through and replacing some word that got spoken wrong, you know, and going through and tagging all the footage of, you know, the B-roll of whatever interaction you and I had at some conference and tagging it with our name so that somebody else can find it later. I mean, that's like the boring stuff, so that we can still be up here, you know, doing the cool creative stuff. So I feel like that is something that's also supporting creative learning and development of digital creatives everywhere.
Yeah, you hit it on the head. Like companies like Skyloom with their Luminar AI software are playing very heavily, and Adobe as well, you know, with their Sensei technology and betting on AI. And you hit it, right? People like to get split, right? People are always split. There's one half that's like, yes, I embrace that. The robot can do all the grunt work for me, and that can free me up to be more creative. And then there are the you know, the doom and gloom people that are like, hey, I'm not turning over my pixels to some robot. I am the true artist. Right. Where's the line between artist and AI if I let that thing help me? So I don't know. I'm on the first side. You know, I believe that the technology is here to help us do things, kind of like automatic transmissions in a car versus shifting, right?
I mean, talk about like script writing, for example. I mean, I really started out after my, you know, Forrest Gump stuff. I really ended up doing a lot of script writing early on in my career. And, you know, I think about how many hours I spent typing things up and, you know, on my, you know, ancient whatever 386 computer with like 1 gigabyte of memory, and you know, how long it would take to generate stuff and insert things and all this stuff. And now, like, there's all these automated functions. You don't even think about it. So, I mean, there's stuff that just happens. And eventually, you know, we get on board and realize that we can move on and do something that's a little more intellectual and interesting.
And there's always the people that are going to be naysayers. It's always the, hey, that's not real photography because it's not shot on film, or that's not real art because it's not painted.
And I'm okay with that. Like, go shoot it on film. I mean, there's a lot of filmmakers now who are going back to film. And I started out in film, and I love film. There's stuff about film that I absolutely love. I'd be happy anytime if I ever had a client who wouldn't mind the workflow for me to go back to shooting and film, because there's some things about film that I absolutely love. And I love the tangible aspect of it too, you know? Yeah, go, you know, knock yourselves out. If you're that person who wants to do it that way, there's nothing stopping you.
Yeah, absolutely. In the world of photography, it's like the word and is a bad word. It has to be or. You can shoot raw or JPEG, Nikon or Canon.
I know, but you know what? That's just creatives all the time, right? I mean, you know, and we get into that same thing with the tech that we do love too. Like, I remember probably at the same NAB conference that you went to, you know, I was on some panel and everybody was talking about, you know, 8K, you know, we can't wait for 8K and everything's going to be in 8K. And then one of my fellow panelists, I remember, asked everybody to like, raise your hand if you've ever had to like run a drive across town or ship a drive FedEx like urgently, you know, like we are not quite ready for that many pixels in some of our workflow. So, you know, it's always push pull, get to the next level, but make the workflow work for the level we're at right now. So that's okay. That's the fun of being in the industries that we're in.
It is the fun, and it's also the challenge, right? Because having been a marketer at, you know, Apple and Adobe and these companies like that, I know firsthand that the features that, or the innovations, even though they are groundbreaking innovations, are marketing driven. And if it's a lot of them are marketing driven, and it's what are we going to do for NAB? We got to have some new features in the thing for NAB. Right. What's the tentpole of this year's NAB? Oh, 8K. So let's tell everyone 8K is the way forward. So how do you, as an art, you know, this is the perfect question for you as a filmmaker, director, you know, you're in that world. How do you sift out the marketing hyperbole from the actual, this is the stuff that I need to get the job done? Yeah,
I get it. Okay. Well, first of all, like, I'm like everybody else, you know, if I go to CES or NAB, you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store and I want everything. So I get that. So just setting that aside. But I think it just goes back to the first questions that we talked about. Why am I telling this story? Who am I telling it to? And where is that audience? Those are the three questions I always come back to. So it's not, you know, which camera should I use first or which lens should I use first? It's those questions first. And then I can choose what technology is going to get me to that point or is going to allow me to multipurpose the footage more easily. That's the question that I have to ask first, is the who and the where. And then that drives all the other decisions from the creative side and the creative, you know, vision side of, you know, maybe this is a Steadicam shot, or maybe we don't have room for a Steadicam and it's got to be a little DJI Osmo, you know, in somebody's car. I mean, you know, so all of those things are the questions that drive the answer for the creative decision.
Yeah, and then also budget, right? So how much can you afford to invest in this project that you're doing?
That's a great thing to bring up, because this is like one of my real bones to pick. And it's that everybody's always talking about like the budget for this thing, right? Whether if you're a photographer, it's the budget for this wedding shoot, or for me, it's like the budget for this video shoot. And I'm always trying to get the client to rethink that whole concept. And I say, I'm producing a bucket of assets and they're going to be for like 50 stories, not just this one story. So, you know, I might be doing 5 or 6 interviews and they're going to be interview outtakes on the website. And we're going to do little snippets of interviews for Instagram stories. And then we're going to have the, you know, the 10-minute version for the live event. And we're going to have the 2-minute teaser version for the promo for the event. And so, you know, and the same thing for the wedding photographer. It's going to be, it's not just, you know, the one wedding. It's going to be photos you're going to have for your anniversary and photos to share with your friends and family and, you know, all different kinds of components that are the outputs, right? So not just one output. Nobody's making one story. Even if you're making a feature film, you're still making, you know, 50 other strands of content for the website and the promos and all the rest of it.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's so much to talk about with you. This is fascinating. So what, as a filmmaker, what film, obviously Forrest Gump and others that you've worked on, but what, you know, today, looking at the landscape of films that are available today, and there's a ton, right, with all these streaming services and series and everything that we can dive into, which ones do you look at from a technical standpoint and say, holy crap, that is well done. Oh, bravo, God. People.
All
bravo.
Right, all right. Now, you know, I was not prepared for that question, but I'm going to tell you a couple of things that I'm just hooked on right now, and it could be different tomorrow if you ask me. But so one series that I binge watched during the COVID stuff was Ozark. I think the sound design, I mean, it's fabulous from every perspective, character development, script, directing, everything. But the sound design is unbelievable. The really? Sound design makes every single episode resonate, terrify, move you, confuse you, draw you into the story. And just if you're not, you know, interested in the series, if you just watch the first 10, 15 seconds of every episode and listen to it, you will not be able to not watch the rest of the episode. It's unbelievable, the sound.
Tell us what sound design is, though, because when I think sound design, yeah, I think Foley and sound the sound.
It can be. It's a whole combination of things. And I actually wrote a book about sound so that just came out. So that's why it's kind of on my mind. Yeah. With Cheryl Ottenritter, my co-author. So shout out, and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yes.
And it's all about sound and story for nonfiction film and video makers. And so sound design is really the creative art of taking the sound edit, which is, you know, you're going to have to edit some sound, right? Whoever the speaking parts are. And there might be music. And as you say, there might be Foley to add layers of different sounds. I mean, a lot of times in my projects, there might be 8 or 10 layers of sound. And in a feature film, there might be 40 or 50. Wow. And so to make that story come alive, there are just lots of little moments of sound, including silence. We have a whole chapter on silence because, you know, a lot of people think they got to have wall-to-wall sound. But mm-hmm. actually, silence is a very important component in storytelling in film as well. So that's kind of sound design in a nutshell. It's sort of taking all those layers, putting them all together. And it takes real artistry to put all of those pieces together and support the story, but not overdo it.
Yeah. Is when you're working on sound on a big budget project, is all the sound in, let's say it's a feature film like Forrest Gump or something like that, is all the sound in that production created later, or is it captured there? Like, I know obviously dialogue
I'm
is, but like,
I'm not going to speak to feature film sound because I really don't work in those departments. Okay, but I'll just say on my own productions, even on smaller budget productions, I do a combination. I actually make a sound shot list the same way I make a video shot list. What? So when I'm envisioning a project and I'm doing my pre-work and my research or pre-interviews or whatever it is, or location scouting, I'm thinking also about the sounds that tell that story. So, you know, if I'm doing something on a farm about a farmer, you know, I want to be able to hear those cows mooing, and, you know, but I don't want them mooing so loud that I can't hear his interview. So I might have his interview in one place, but I might go pick up some of that Foley, you know, sound, or that wild sound, as we call it, of the cows mooing. That wouldn't actually be Foley unless you had a cow in your basement and you were recording in there, but her there. You know, so I want to, you know, make sure I think about the components of that story that have to do with sound. You know, when he's getting up really early to, you know, milk those cows and you hear the, you know, the rooster crowing or whatever. Those are all these different sounds that are going to layer in and make that story come alive. And I may or may not be able to shoot them all on site. So then that's where you might have to build some of them after the fact through, you know, sound effects library, or maybe you, you know, go out with your Zoom audio recorder and you pick up the sounds yourself on a different day, which I've done. So, those things are really accessible to filmmakers of any budget.
Yeah, that is so cool. There's so much to this stuff. And, you know, one of the things we hear all the time is the importance of sound, especially in this YouTube era, right? And you can, and I've seen it, right? I can watch a video, even if it's just a short screen capture tutorial about some Photoshop technique or something. If the audio is crap, then everything shifts in my head. I think less of the presenter. I think less of the content. I trust it less, even if it's great content.
It is a kind of a quandary, especially, for photographers and people who are so focused on the visual and making that perfect and knowing that actually people will forgive a really crappy visual if it comes with good audio, but they won't do it the other way around. It's so interesting to me, even though I spend quite a bit of time thinking about beautiful visuals and compelling visuals. But you're right. And I think this is where kind of do-it-yourself videos often fall down. People are like, oh, you can just shoot it with your phone. And that's why I got, my own remote little wireless kit for my phone. If I did have to do phone stuff, mostly for social media, I don't really use it for filmmaking, but it can be used for filmmaking. I mean, Nikki Sun is a great example. She just did a great little video that was featuring the Saramonic and some other tools. And we'll put that link in the notes as well, because that's a great example of a very small mobile kit filmmaking having a big impact. So, I mean, the tools are out there, and it's pretty much, whatever you want to use and whatever you can afford to use for the project.
Yeah. It's so interesting where we are today, because it's easy to overlook, I think, because things change so rapidly, and these innovations in technology, whether there be computational photography or AI or whatever, we're just like, oh, my phone takes better pictures now. Great, but if you contrast that with where things were, like, say, some of the seminal work of Alfred Hitchcock or someone like that had very little to work with comparatively to what we have in our back pockets today, both on the video and sound side. I'm curious, from your standpoint, are we approaching a point where a filmmaker could just, maybe get a good mic and some lights or whatever, and then create an entire big budget film almost with just a very good smartphone?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think you still have to have skills of storytelling. Yeah. And you talk about Hitchcock, and I'm a huge fan. The composition of shots in Hitchcock films are unparalleled. The choices that he makes, Strangers on a Train being one of my all-time favorite stories, the broken eyeglasses, what that signifies, how it ties to another part of the film and another character in the film. I mean, you can't just replicate that because you have the same tools that he had at hand, I mean, so I think that, and that goes back to what you originally talked about. I mean, there always will be the auteur. There will always be the filmmaker who put their stamp on the film or on the photograph because of who they are and what they bring to that image. I mean, and I would never, say that I'm anywhere in that kind of a league, but I, if I look at the work that I do, I mean, people can recognize me in that work. I have certain stylistic approaches to work. And sometimes people will call me and say, oh, this is an Amy story. I don't exactly know what that means, but I sort of know what they're saying because it resonates with me and they understand that I'm going to come into that story a particular way that I approach it. And it doesn't really have to do with the tools that I have. It has to just do with who I am and where I've been.
Yeah. And where you're going, I'm curious about, as we wrap this up, and thank you so much for being so gracious with your time on this. I'm curious about the Gals and Gear project that you kind of spearheaded and worked on. Can you talk about that a little bit and the stuff you're doing in that area?
Yeah, I would love to. And here's my Gals and Gear mug. Very exciting. Nice. It's a very large mug.
Nice.
So Gals and Gear started as me in the bathroom at NAB Show, which is, for those who don't know, a conference out in Las Vegas with 90,000 of our favorite friends in media and entertainment and tech. And there was literally no line at the ladies' room in a bath, at a conference of 90,000 people. And I was like, where are my gals? Mm-hmm. And so I decided that, we needed to amplify women's voices a little bit more. in our industry and make sure that they were speaking on stages, make sure they had networking opportunities and events and felt like they had a place there. So we kind of created this hashtag pop-up Gals in Gear, and we started joining with Broadcast Beat and NAB and some other partners like Black Magic and Dolby and you know, lots of Adobe and other partners to bring some great content to stages at NAB. And then we started doing some training workshops and making sure that women who were out there working in the field got some recognition, and also that we made some opportunities for younger women to get a handle and get a rung on the ladder, so to speak, and be connected to people who could help them propel their career. So we've continued to do that, and we have a website, galsandgear.tv, where we have some different networking opportunities and events, and we just launched a leadership academy that was really successful, and so we're going to be doing more things in the area of women in leadership, which I think we really need in our industry. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's still quite lacking in women in leadership positions in the biggest companies, and also, you know, in the below the line tech jobs, from cinematographer to sound designer and editor and everything else.
You have a lot of work to do, my friend.
Not going to say at all I'm doing it alone. This is an effort. You know, there are many organizations. I started it with Women in Film and Video, and they're still our partners. There's a group called Rise that's out of the UK that's doing a similar thing, more specific to the broadcast industry. I mean, there's many, many people engaged in this effort, and it's going to take all efforts to be sure that women filmmakers, BIPOC filmmakers, you know, have a seat at the table, have access to the gear and the tech and the networking to make their careers sing.
Yeah. Yeah. So much work to do, so much education. That's the cool thing about this, right? Like we talked about earlier on, the where virtual and distance learning has evolved to will make a lot of that much easier as we go forward.
I hope so. I think access is still an issue. And certainly, you know, if you have any Zoom schoolers in your life, then you know all the accessibility issues that have faced so many families. So I think there's similar access issues that we have to grapple with in our industry. And I, you know, every little bit helps. So, you know, for the people who are watching the podcast, you know, if you're a photographer and you're hiring an assistant, think about hiring a woman, thinking about hiring a person of color, somebody who, you know, doesn't necessarily look like you and sound like you, but maybe who's going to do a great job and learn the ropes just like you did, because this is a very hands-on industry that we're in. Everybody learns by doing and by having somebody hand them some gear and say, help me with this. So we need to hand that gear to the next generation and let them participate and let them learn alongside of us.
I love it. Amy, you are fantastic. Yeah, I could talk to you forever. If we're ever at a cocktail party, I will dominate your time. You'll be that. Hey, Frederick, I gotta go.
We're gonna have some fun when we get back to real 3D land.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, 3D land. What's next for you? What's on your plate? Where can people connect with you and find out what you're doing? All that good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, of course, they can find me on Twitter. I'm at BrandBuzz. On Instagram, I'm AD BrandBuzz. Or you can just go to my website, amydlouise.com. There's a place there you can link to me. So I'm always happy to hear from people or hear their questions or concerns. And I blog quite a bit about all kinds of things, tech and creative. In terms of next things, I've got a lot in the pipeline. I just finished shooting a new LinkedIn Learning course called Launching Your Creative Business.
What?
So I'm super excited about that because I know there's a lot of people out there who maybe were on staff and now are freelance, or maybe they had to become freelance and they need to know, like, oh my gosh, how do I run a creative business? So that's going to be going live soon. As I said, I have a new book out about the role of sound in video storytelling. And I'm working on some other fun projects with Gals and Gear. Like I said, our Leadership Academy is launching this spring. So that look out for that. We'll be coming along around the same time as Post-Production World. It will preview at that time. So lots going on.
I love it. I love it. Congratulations on everything that you're working on. You are crushing it, doing good stuff and doing good stuff for people, which is fantastic amidst a global pandemic. So look at you. So good job.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm just like sitting here in my little box, or, you know, I have gone out on a few shoots, but I'm covered, you know, head to toe in gear and protective equipment. So I feel like I'm not really out in the world. So it's nice to get some feedback. I appreciate that.
No, for sure. Sure. You are definitely a guiding star for people that want to be doing what you're doing. And you know what I'm going to do after we hang up here, I'm going to go watch Forrest Gump and I'm going to look in the credits.
No. And you know what? I was just going to say, all these people are going to be looking for me on IMDb. Yeah. I won't be there because back in the day, because now you're, you know, it's going to date me, but, you know, they didn't have like all the production babies in the credits and, you know, the 45th grip to the left and stuff. It was only the top of the line people. You didn't have it in your deal memo. Yeah. So I worked on like 10 features that I am not in. Now I think somebody told me I can go submit, you know, and make them add me to IMDb, but you know, whatever. That was a long time ago. So
don't worry
about it. But I will say that whatever you work on early in your career really influences you. And I was so lucky to work with the team from ILM because, you know, that was the beginning of digital, actually. Yes. I just didn't know it at the time. I was just like, this is my little job. I'm working 500 hours a day for $5. you know, I got in on the ground floor of digital and green screen and, you know, all that groovy stuff. So it was actually a really great learning experience. So I always tell, you know, young people when I speak at schools and colleges and stuff, like just jump into whatever people hire you to do and, you know, try to learn everything you possibly can from everybody you interact with, because that's been my film school, has been learning from other people.
I love it. Amy DeLuise, we will leave it right there. Thank you for chatting with me and letting me chat your ear off today. It's been fantastic. I hope you come on again because we have to do some more focused conversations about VR and all kinds of stuff. Sound, you know, I have thoughts about sound that I need to run by you. So I feel multiple podcasts in you coming out.
I love it. Let's do it. I need the entertainment over here because in my little box, you know, it's getting a little tiresome.
Yeah, I hear you. Welcome to my world. This is it right here. This is my little veal box right here.
I love it. And your podcasts are great. So I'm just so happy to be part of it.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Amy DeLuise, you have a fantastic rest of your day and a good weekend. And we'll talk to you soon.
This is Twitter.